The descendant of Atari's arcade game Pong is the wildly popular cell phone game Angry Birds, produced by the small Finnish company Rovio. With your finger, you pull back a slingshot holding a bird, calculate the angle, and catapult it into an increasingly elaborate array of structures sheltering evil pigs. I can't stop playing it. Maybe we're hardwired to send things flying in parabolas because cavemen did it to capture prey or something. I don't know. Jamin Brophy Warren, editor of the literary gaming magazine Killscreen, says we engage much more than we know with the work of game designers. But where he sees art, the mainstream media see toasters.
The words that are used to describe video games. Most major publications do not place video games in italics or quotation marks.
The titles of specific
games. The titles of specific games.
As they would with a novel.
They treat them like a Toyota Prius, right? We would never put a Prius in quotation marks. Or Windows Vista, right? And I think that that distinction is very important, and it changes the way that people think about video games. They think about them as technological product, as opposed to something that was created, that there were artists, and there was a team of people who were responsible for it. And I think that that gesture is symbolic of how most mainstream publications think about video games. Our core demographic is 21 to 45. They live in cities. They generally make more than $60,000 a year. But the big thing is that they're a cultural consumer. So we ask them, what other things do they do? So they play video games 5 to 12 hours a week. But their favorite network is HBO. They read The New Yorker and they read Wired. They buy a book once a month. They go see a movie once a month. If you didn't know that they were video game players, you would describe them as cultural elites. They are people who grew up on video games and now they have discretionary income, and they think, oh, it's very natural for me to have Xbox. In the same way that I have my movies, and maybe I have some graphic novels, and I have my books, I also have video games right next to it. There's no distinction there for them.
Is this why you have a problem with the word gamer?
I do. I think that the perception of who plays video games is changing a lot. And there are a lot of people who don't think of themselves as video game players who are. People play Farmville. Farmville is a Facebook game where you basically set up a farm and you buy in-game items. And
how many people play Farmville?
Over 200 million, something like that. It is incredibly popular. So if it's a 50-year-old mom in Kansas and she's playing Farmville 40, 50 hours a week, by any other description, those are hardcore gamers, but they don't think of themselves as gamers. So people who play Angry Birds, anybody who's played Angry Birds for hours and hours and hours, you are a gamer.
Jamin Brophy Warren is the editor of Killscreen magazine. Once I tried to play a massive multiplayer online game called EverQuest. I could have been an elf or a human or a troll, but I chose to enter that magic realm as a gnome named Kreplach. Kreplach took her maiden steps into EverQuest and fell down. And like the old lady in the commercial, I tried and tried, but couldn't get up. For all I know, Kreplach is still lying there. Novelist Nicholson Baker wrote in The New Yorker about his own journey into video games, when, in an effort to suss out his son's obsession, he plunged into the first-person shooter.
I thought the only way to make sense of it was to do the equivalent of taking a trip down the Nile. With the help of my son, I just came up with a list of 8 or 9 games that were the big releases. Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed. The first thing I learned was that video games are extremely difficult.
Did you learn how to play well enough to be able to understand what your son and his friends might be getting out of them?
Yes, I started to enjoy it, especially Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, which was the biggest hit of last year. I got completely caught up in it and fascinated by the kind of odd political message that it had, or the cynicism, or maybe it was sincerity. I couldn't figure it out. But the main thing was that I died a lot, and every time I died, they gave me this aphorism from all sorts of people, Dick Cheney, Gandhi, Confucius, that was a good one. Before you embark on a journey of revenge, you must dig 2 graves. Well, there's a lot of truth in that, but it comes after you've died in this miserable firefight, and you're often exhausted because you've been through the same firefight, say, 7 or 8 times and failed. I think that outsiders underestimate the importance of learning how to fail at something very complicated over and over again and then finally make it.
It was towards the end of your experiment with video games that you played Heavy Rain, which you said was one of the most self-consciously artistic of the games on the list.
Yes. The script, 2,000 pages long, branching possibilities. You know what? As soon as you call something an art form, which obviously video games are, the people who are doing the thing kind of tense up, and they start thinking we're artists, so we should be arty. What does arty mean to people who aren't really having fun? It means it's a downer. And I don't know. I felt that Heavy Rain was a deeply unhappy experience. I mean, you watch your own son die in front of your eyes, and then you spend the rest of the time trying to save the life of your other son. And one way or another, you chop off bits of yourself and kill other people. And it's so hackneyed. Why can't things be funny and arty? Why can't they be maybe bloody, but bloody in a fresh way? Why do they have to be echoing cop shows that we all have seen from the 80s and 90s?
Novelist Nicholson Baker. Tom Bissell, author of Extra Lives, Why Video Games Matter, agrees that video games are least artful when they try to mimic other art forms. But as he told us earlier this year, when video game designers play to the strengths of the genre, violence can be a profound experience.
In Grand Theft Auto 4, they created this really tormented, kind of awful character named Nico.
During the war, we did some bad things. And bad things happen to us. Maybe that is no excuse. But I need money. This pays. And I'm good at it.
Nico is trying to escape his nature, and that's what the game is really about. Nico is fundamentally a bad guy. But he has a decent sense of right and wrong, and you sense that he kind of wants to do the right thing. Now, the problem is that the game actually asks him to do bad things throughout the entire game, and he does them with varying levels of enthusiasm. To me, the really riveting part of the game was rooting for him and trying to play it in a way that honored my conception of him, which was as a legitimately tormented person.
You're animating Nico.
You're both observing him and you're also portraying him, which is this really weird thing that video games do.
You make a point of saying, you know, that what books allow you to do is to inhabit the consciousness of another person. Is that getting better in today's games?
Well, no, and I don't think it really can. I really think if you work in a medium, your point is to bring out what the medium does best. As a fiction writer, what I seek to achieve is that sense that you, the reader, has entered into another human being who is suddenly a living person, and you are getting a guided tour of their mind. And that's the thing that only fiction can give you. All of the juice of video game storytelling comes from those moments in which, for instance, at the end of Grand Theft Auto, Nico has this run-in with someone who betrayed him. Nico's been looking for him the whole game. This man is like a pathetic, drug-addicted wretch, and Nico has the gun to his head, and suddenly the game gives control back to you, and you have to decide what to do with this guy. Do you walk away, or do you kill him? Your impulse is to show him mercy because you're a human being, but at the same time, you can't forget what Nico has sort of suffered because of this guy. That is the kind of storytelling that I love about games. It actually gives you this weird and often very troubling kind of agency, and fiction can't do that, movies can't do that. That's the kind of things that I love about games, is those moments of just jaw-dropping, scary freedom.
Writer Tom Bissell. Bissell says there's something inherent in the video game medium that creates a weird push and pull between the creator and the audience, and that sometimes they wrestle for meaning. And it doesn't leave you when you leave the game. Tetris slips behind your eyelids, raining rectangles, even as you try to sleep. It's called the Tetris effect. How might expecting rewards and penalties from every action change you? How might long hours pulling the strings of the conflicted Nico change you? How might those experiences shared by millions change the world? Some informed speculation up next. This is On the Media.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.